Quiero dejarle con una entrevista que estuvimos haciéndole a un billonario de cripto que vive ahora mismo en Puerto Rico. Se llama Jordan Fried. Estuvimos haciéndole varias preguntas. Este es el fundador de NFT.com, que incluso hace poco lanzaron su primer NFT, Genesis Key. Adicional a esto, es un dueño o un shareholder de una compañía que cotiza dentro de la bolsa de Canadá como Immutable Holdings. Ahora, esta persona no tan solo se encarga en invertir en criptomonedas, sino que también se encarga a invertir en diferentes mercados, y gracias a eso es que ha alcanzado su fortuna. Vamos a estar hablando sobre el Web3, y qué mejor que tener también a uno de los fundadores de Infusion Investment, que es Cristian Arenas, que nos va a estar hablando, ¿verdad? Que es la parte que se concentra más en criptomonedas dentro de la compañía, que le va a estar haciendo preguntas importantes, no tan solo business-wise, ¿verdad? De negocios. También vamos a estar hablando un poquito más sobre cómo o cuál es el futuro de las criptomonedas y unas cosas bien interesantes que estaban diciendo. Adicional a eso, hay algo que quiero recalcarles, es que esta entrevista es en inglés, pero realmente está brutal. Si tú puedes, tómate un tiempo para poder escucharla completa, si quieres darle para atrás y escucharla nuevamente, porque esto es una persona que tuvimos en nuestras manos, que tiene muchísimo dinero y que nosotros también podemos, ¿verdad? De alguna manera u otra, ver sus pasos, qué cosas él ha hecho para nosotros también copiarlo de alguna manera u otra para poder lograr el éxito. Así que dentro de Infusion Investment estamos innovando, vamos a seguir trayendo contenido totalmente diferente. Y de una vez aprovecho que abajo en los comentarios escriban qué tipo de personas ustedes quieren tener en este podcast y qué necesidades ustedes tienen ahora mismo y qué preguntas ustedes le quisieran hacer tal vez a una persona que entrevistemos en un futuro. Porque al fin y al cabo, cuando uno se sienta a hacer una entrevista, uno quiere saber también qué cosa esa persona hizo para lograr el éxito. Así que eso es lo que queremos lograr aquí con este podcast de Infusion Investment. Así que nada, los dejo con la entrevista, que está súper buena.
Saludos y bienvenidos a otro episodio más de Master Your Money Habit by Infusion Investment. El día de hoy les habla Cristian Arena, COO y cofundador de Infusion Investment. Y les notifico de anticipación. Tenemos una persona muy especial en el podcast, y el podcast se va a llevar en inglés, ya que pues es el primer lenguaje de esta persona. Pero no va a faltar el contenido, va a ser un contenido excepcional y vamos a entrar a indagar. Y no tenemos una mejor persona que nos pueda ayudar en el área de cripto. Así que un fuerte aplauso y un saludo a Jordan Fried.
Gracias, gracias. Entiendo todo, pero hablo muy mal.
Oh, no. You're speaking well, actually.
Thank you.
That's a great, great accent you have, because, I mean, it's understandable. So, Jordan, let me. When Jordan first came on the door, I was like, I told my guys to not let me go a fanboy on you, because I got the same background. I know about you for a while now.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I've been following you for a while now. I saw you on 10X GirlCon, and I was like,
Were you there, or you watched it online?
No, I was there.
Oh, wow.
I was there. Amazing. So we saw you there, and I was like, I've seen that guy somewhere. I've seen you in photos, but it's not the same. Like, you in photo, people in photo looks differently, at least to me. Yeah, I'm not
sure
going that. But I was like, okay, I've seen him. Then when we started investigating, and I was like, I know those offices. He's close by, like really close by. I know I've seen him somewhere. And so, yeah, we got in contact. We got you, man. We got you for this interview.
Yeah, I'm super happy to be here. We literally work next to each other.
Yeah.
Our buildings are not technically connected, but it's the same developers, the same complex, right?
Yeah, definitely. So I want to dive into something. Like, there's a big thing that everyone, at least on the team, they were wondering about, and you're gonna know this name, RuneScape.
Of course.
No, you cannot. But
I don't have time. I want to. I don't have time to play RuneScape right now, and I cannot. Of course, I have a lifetime ban from the game. I could probably get around it. It'd be pretty hard to figure out who I was.
Yeah.
I don't know if they take a social security number.
No,
or details
they don't.
Like that. I don't have time to play. I loved that game, though. Loved it.
Oh, it changed a lot. So I'm going to start from there, because I want to know that background from like the start. I believe, like, for me, that was the beginning of me getting into finance, because, you know, RuneScape had their own economy. You had the Grand Exchange in it. That was for me the starting on finance and programming, because that's where I started coding. So for you, how was it? Like, can you tell me the story on that?
Yeah, I found RuneScape. I was probably 11, 12 years old. And when I found RuneScape, what I fell in love with it was like the real world. Yep. It had its own money. It had the concept of a bank account, and it felt like you were building a business, but you were building this virtual life.
Yep.
For those that don't know RuneScape, it's a massive multiplayer online role-playing game where you are wander around this browser-based world, and you can cut down trees and you can fight other players. I quickly realized that the fan base was massive. There was this website, you may remember, runehq.com, yep, which was the main fan forum of RuneScape. And I learned that people would pay money. People on the forum were talking about RWT, and I'm like, what's RWT? It's real world trading. People would pay real world currency, real world money, US dollars, for RuneScape gold points. So I quickly realized, hey, what if I set up a business? I went and took my dad's credit card, and I went to Yahoo Small Business, and I bought a domain name called runemint.com. And I stood up this really simple one-page website where I said, selling RuneScape gold points, 1 million RuneScape gold points for 20 US dollars. I pulled the number out of a hat, right? It's not a real number. I sold out everything we had. I think, you know, I left it up. We went to middle school the next day. I came home. There was like $250 or $300 in the account.
And this was back when,
this is like 2001. This is like really early. This is the first version.
Okay.
Right. This is before you could ever pay with a credit card. It was so early that I had to actually mail, when you got the pro account, I had to get an envelope, put $5 in the envelope, and mail it to a PO box in like Alabama or Wisconsin or something.
Yeah. You could use a money order too.
Yeah. And you wrote your username down on a piece of paper and you mailed it. I don't even know if that's legal, but that's how Jagex Limited in London was getting all of us US people to pay them. They didn't have US payment processing, or there wasn't a good way to do it. So I set up this website, and I was using PayPal and Yahoo Small Business, and, you know, $250 the first day, or $300, and then it grows to immediately $1,000, and then it grows to $2,000, and then $3,000. And next thing I know, we are just printing money. But I have a big problem. I've got no more RuneScape gold points. So I go back to RuneHQ, and I contact the owners of RuneHQ, and I said, how much for me to run a banner ad at the top of RuneHQ that would say buying RuneScape gold points? So I quickly, using Flash, Macromedia Flash 5, I made a quick little banner ad, sent them the banner ad, and I said buying RuneScape gold points for $10. So we were buying for $10, we were selling for $20. Apparently that's called market making.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I'm 12 years old. And we became one of the largest market maker for RuneScape gold points. I got out with hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was great. But I got, I had a pretty rough day when I came home from school. My mom was sobbing, just crying. I had been served while I was at school. Certified mail, been served, taken to court in London. When RuneScape finally figured out who I was, they dropped all charges. Yep. They're like, hey, this guy's 12 years old. I actually recently dug up the RuneScape legal letters, so I have them.
That's a good piece of memory.
Yeah, it's a good piece of memory. I think we're going to frame it in the office or do something with it. The business got shut down. Lifetime ban from eBay, lifetime ban from RuneScape, lifetime ban from PayPal. The eBay connection was I actually started selling it on eBay as well, in addition to our own website. So not allowed to use eBay anymore, which is, you know, whatever. What can you do? And that was my first experience with digital currency a decade before Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin is 2008 white paper, 2009, January 3rd, 2009 Genesis block. This is 8 years, almost a decade before then.
Yeah, and it's amazing, just to put it in context. So way before, like right now, everybody's, you know, the NFTs and all crypto, it's, you know, exploding. Still, there's people that don't know or have heard of them, but don't know how they work. But like the system that it's implemented that we see on crypto, it was used way before 2009, when we first saw Bitcoin. We were doing that with, there was a couple games, and they were from Blizzard too. I think it was Diablo 3, 2, the Diablo, yeah, 2.
Sure.
So that was one of the biggest games that people could sell online stuff for real world money. So we
also Second Life. Remember Second Life? Second Life was a whole economy with Linden dollars. By the way, it's still in existence. I just found out the company behind Second Life still makes tens of millions of dollars a year from the game Second Life.
Wow.
Which is crazy. It's still a very profitable business. People are addicted to MMORPGs. And the notion that you can't make real world money from your virtual characters, we're starting to move away from that. Web3 is really an end to that kind of thinking. This mm-hmm. closed garden or walled off garden. The players that contribute value to these games should be also allowed to make money in these games.
And definitely.
You have that Decentraland, Axie Infinity now, lots of other metaverse style environments where you can own the land and own the currency and sell it.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to that place, because I would like to put it on a way where, our generation has been somewhat marginalized for like being addicted to internet or trying to find like new ideas on the internet. Like we are not hard workers or maybe we think different, we work different. So when you started going into the RuneScape and making this money, were you like coding or were you like playing the game and earning the money? How was the operation behind it?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky. I grew up with a very technical father, very technical. I got to learn how to build motherboards. A lot of people don't even know what those are, but the motherboards I was building back when I was 11 years old, the processors in our phones are now orders of magnitude more powerful than those, but these were the motherboards running these modem-based PCs that we were building. This is like Duke Nukem days, right? First person shooter, white text on a black screen. This is before visual operating systems. I think then we got into Windows 94, 95 after that. Then you had a visual interface for how you navigated all of your applications. I learned how to build computer applications and then learned how to program web applications. My web applications were very basic. I wouldn't even call myself a full-blown programmer. I was more of a hacker. I used a website called htmlgoodies.net or .com back in the day, where I would take a script and I would figure out, okay, well, this is how you start a header. This is how you end a header. This is how you start the body text. And I would make these really cute web pages with just pictures on them at first, and then with text boxes, and then forms that you could submit that would send an email, and then forms that would go to a database. And then I learned how to build shopping carts and then e-commerce. I'm still very dangerous around a WordPress open source code base. I learned enough about Python and Django and PHP. So, you know, my time on the internet was really well spent. I was self-educating. I was learning. I have the personality type to do that. A lot of people don't, so I don't know if it's good for everybody, but I, you know, in a self-paced way, learned how to build landing pages. That's how I got out of Buffalo. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, very blue-collar town, great people, great city. But that's how I paid my way out of Buffalo. I didn't finish school, dropped out of school, bought a one-way ticket to Budapest, Hungary, and used my online technical skills to be able to build landing pages, which ended up turning into a business. It was a VPN company. Oh. That's where my story went next. I learned how to program and learned how to tunnel traffic from Eastern Europe to the East Coast of the United States, so that anytime I would log into a web page from Budapest, it would think I was in America. So I got to watch American Netflix, I got to use Hulu, Pandora, Spotify, everything else, all these applications being blocked for everyone in Hungary. And my friends would come over and be like, how the hell do you have Netflix here? Like Netflix hadn't even expanded globally back in, this is 2011 now. So Netflix wasn't even outside of the US yet, it was only for Americans. And they're like, can you get me a Netflix account? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. You have a credit card? Great, boom. And we would do it. And then they're like, well, can we pay you for this? Can we give, and I'm like, okay, cool, we'll sell subscriptions. And then we started selling subscriptions. Next thing I know, you know, blows up, it's a full-blown business. And I did that for 7 years, virtual private networks.
Wow, and it's amazing how the transition you had from RuneScape doing this system going to VPN and how it evolves. And I mean, it shows how the economy is moving. Like on your case, you were very technical from little, but you know, economy is moving regardless. Like you either adapt or you try to renovate what you have. So it's amazing how you your transition from that to a VP and into what we have today. Like, I mean, man, you're Jordan Fry. You have CEO, chairman, Immutable Holdings. You got NFT, which I'm part of the community. Congrats on the launch.
Thank you.
Man, it's amazing. We're going to talk about that further on. But I found it very intriguing. Like, how can a father, you told me you had two, right? You have two.
Two small kids. Five-year-old and 5-month-old.
I have a 4-year-old and I find it amazing, like, how kids can find a way and figure out stuff. And sometimes we try to get them into the right path, but sometimes they are on the right path. Like, we don't have the vision to see the future and see what's holding up over there. And maybe they're creating it right now and we don't have it. So it's really amazing to see how you evolve from one place to another. So going now to crypto, you started, when was the first time you heard about crypto?
Yeah, great question. So timing is everything in life. And, even just to finish off on the last comment you made, I think there's a couple things that are really important for small children and a couple things for people listening to this to understand. One, the core principle, and it's kind of the Steve Jobs quote, everything around you, all of the guidelines in the world that we live in, it was invented by people not much smarter than us. This whole societal notion that you need to go to college, you need to build a resume, right? And do lots of extracurricular activities. So you have this thing called a resume so you can get a really good job, so you can be marketable in the workforce, so that you can then get a mortgage and then be in debt paying off a 30-year mortgage on a house at high interest rates, so that you can live happily ever after. And all of these things, all of these check boxes that society checks us, and we get these things called credit scores to see if we're credit worthy. And if you don't own a house, you have a lower credit score. It's all really outdated thinking. And if you start to question why does the world work the way it works, it makes sense why we are where we are. But if you can fundamentally question and challenge, there is a better way. There's a better way to send money. PayPal was an innovation in mapping money to email, but we can do better than PayPal. And we have something better than PayPal now. We have stablecoins. Now, there's some news about stablecoins recently. We can talk about that. But stablecoins fundamentally, when you look past the FUD, the fear, uncertainty, and the doubt, stablecoins are going to be part of our lives for the rest of our lives and are very disruptive and will solve lots of problems. We're seeing it right now in Ukraine, where we can send money directly to the Ukrainian government, where they get 100% of the proceeds of the funds. It's not the Red Cross taking 10%. So, I didn't answer your actual question to how I got into crypto and how I got so passionate about it. I don't think I would have understood crypto if I didn't have this deep-seated notion that first, the internet in its current form is flawed. The internet that we are using is evolving rapidly. We kind of grew up in the generation where we got to witness the internet evolving. We started off where literally web pages, remember the first version of Yahoo or even Alta Vista? It was just a directory. There was no search. You just click links. Oh, I'm looking for cars. Okay, you click cars and then you click automobiles. And then we got web searching. We had Ask Jeeves, ask.com, and then you had Google, full-blown PageRank and web crawler algorithms that would, index links across the site and give you page ranks. So we've seen that evolve, and we know it'll continue to evolve from here. And crypto is merely part of that evolution. So while I'm running this VPN company, it was a normal day. We get this email from an anonymous user who says, I don't want to pay you in Visa or MasterCard anymore. I'd like to pay you in this thing called Bitcoin. And that was the first email. It was probably 2012 at this point. And we decided in 2013 to start finally taking it. This is so early that there wasn't good price discovery for Bitcoin on a day-to-day basis. Like you literally, the only way to figure out what Bitcoin costs was you would literally talk to some people in a forum to be like, hey, do you want to sell me pizza for the Bitcoin? It was not too dissimilar from that. We didn't have coinmarketcap.com. Coinbase was just being started in real time by Brian Armstrong. The only place to really buy or sell Bitcoin was like BitInstant by Charlie Shrem or Mt. Gox, Magic the Gathering online exchange. I didn't trust Magic the Gathering online exchange for Bitcoin or Bitcoin price discovery. It turns out I was right to not trust it because that went belly up. But we ended up taking it. And it was one of those decisions that you make that I don't consider myself brilliant for making that decision. It was timing. I said timing matters. There's this great word, serendipity. I don't know if that translates into Spanish, but it's a fortunate accident. a fortunate accident, which is beautiful. There's a great movie.
There's a restaurant, I think, in New York.
Yeah. I think that restaurant's in the movie.
In the movie, yeah.
With John Cusack. It was a fortunate accident that I started taking Bitcoin, and that's changed my life in more ways than I can imagine. If you look at Bitcoin, it was kind of aligned with the ethos of a VPN, a virtual private network. You should have privacy online. Governments shouldn't be spying on you. You should be independent. You should have freedom. And we ended up donating to a portion of our proceeds that we made from the VPN company to the Electronic Freedom Foundation in causes that we cared about. Fast forward, some guy named Edward Snowden pops up tells the whole world the government is spying on us, and our business 10x'd, you know, within a matter of months. I was fortunate enough to sell that company. I was 27 years old in 2017, and I sold that business when I was 27. 27 year old without a college degree living in Budapest. I get this exit, and it's supposed to be, you think an exit, right? I've got more money than I ever think I'm going to have at any age. And objectively wealthy by any standard. And you start to think, okay, what now? And then I started getting really depressed. Because while I had worked so hard to get to that point in my life, what I realized in that moment was what I really enjoyed was building. I enjoyed building the team. The camaraderie you guys had in this office when I came into the office. I enjoy the company. I enjoy the family, right? I enjoy the process of when you start a business, it's not so much about the lofty goals you set. It's about getting 1% better every day at the goals that you set, constantly improving as a team. I wasn't a very good CEO in the very beginning, and I learned how to become better at it. I still am learning how to become better at it on a day-to-day basis. So I didn't have that anymore. But now I'm in a crypto. I got to keep the Bitcoin. Which is, you know, great. I've made more money on that Bitcoin than I did selling the company. And
yeah, 2017 was Bitcoin was what?
At the time the deal closed, it was $900 to $1,000.
So that was early 2017.
January of 2017.
Yeah, because I remember trying to do some transactions on that, and it skyrocketed from the end of January to beginning of February to 1,500. I was like, this is going fast.
It was going fast. And I was sitting in Budapest, and I started buying up Ether. So there's this Bitcoin thing. I have nothing to do now, so I'm like pretty bored. So I just started reading white papers. So I'm like, okay, so there's Bitcoin. I get Bitcoin. I know how a blockchain works now. It makes sense to me. What other blockchains are there? So Ether, I was able to pick up Ether from between $7 and $15, even before 2017. That was earlier, and then start buying more. And then I just started making investments in the space. You didn't have to be a brilliant investor to make money in 2017. Everything kind of rallied up. Litecoin, I bought at $4 and sold at the peak at 300, right? It was, again, just timing, just knowing where we were in the market and having that intuition, that feeling that, you know, this thing was going to be bigger than the current state that it was in. I think the entire crypto market cap, when I first got into it, was about $20 billion. And at the beginning of 2017, it must have only been 10x that, like $200 billion. So we've now seen it swell to, at peaks, over $2 trillion. And I think now we're around $1 trillion or $1.2 trillion. It was a crazy ride. So I start making investments. The truth is, I'm not an investor. I know a lot of people listening to this probably are. I'm a builder, and I know that to my core. I'm really bored investing. I don't like sitting there investing. I'm a very nervous trader. I don't have what, you know, a lot of people need to have to be good traders. I know that. I don't know how to read charts or anything like that. But I know how to build. I know how to start a company. I know how to create company culture. So I decided to throw my hat in the ring again and do it again. And that became my next venture, which was Hedera Hashgraph. I had partners for that one. Guys much older than me who invented the intellectual property. But my idea was to take that intellectual property and turn it into a blockchain. That's my first unicorn. Hopefully not my last.
Can we dive in a little bit into what... For the following, what Hedera is, because I mean,
yeah,
this will follow up to what we want to see now afterward, Web3. Like, this is a big thing now, NFT.com, but Hedera, I think, forms a big part of it. Like, at least ideally, like the proof of proof of consensus, I think it is, where you got like the gossip.
Yeah, gossip about gossip. That's our consensus algorithm. The whole purpose, like what were we seeing in the market? You had the issue in 2017. Try to put yourself in my perspective. You've got this proof of work blockchain, Bitcoin, that can do 7 to 12 transactions per second. You've got this other proof of work blockchain called Ethereum that can do maybe 12 to 18 transactions per second. But we're in a situation where there's big multi-billion dollar companies who aren't even in the space yet. There was not one multi-billion dollar company doing anything in crypto. And if they were, they were forking the public protocols to create things called like the J chain or the C chain or these separate, there's something called the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, where people take the Ethereum source code, but they deploy it in AWS by themselves. They build effectively their own chain. That doesn't make any sense because the whole value of a blockchain is that it's open, it's public, and we all share the same ledger. So when we looked at what the opportunity for us was, we're like, okay, all the people in the market are depending on these protocols run by kids. We just saw how that went with Luna, right? These are disasters that can happen, but we just lost a $55 billion ecosystem overnight. It's a travesty the size of Enron. So our prediction was right that you need adults in the room to run these protocols. Our vision was, what if we invited Google, IBM, Boeing, Deutsche Telekom, LG Electronics, Nomura to join a limited liability company, a multi-member limited liability company, to govern a layer one blockchain protocol? Everybody laughed in my face, including the US regulators. They let us do it anyway. They gave us a lot of comments. And my job, 27 years old, no college degree, was to go knocking on the door. Like, hey, do you want to join the Hedera Governing Council? Like, hey, do you want to come be part of this thing? Laughing. That you'll never be successful. You'll never pull this off. And after about 100 rejections, we finally got one. And then we got 5. And then we got 10. And today, Hedera is governed by all those companies. The London School of Economics, the University College of London, Shinhan Bank, the largest bank in Korea, Nomura from Japan. These are like some of the most risk-averse organizations. The Development Bank of Singapore, the largest bank in Singapore. These are like the most conservative, risk-averse organizations in the world that are both governing a limited liability company in the United States that also governs a cryptocurrency called HBAR. So it's kind of a crypto for corporates or a mission-critical enterprise-grade blockchain to solve enterprise use cases. The network can do tens of thousands of transactions per second. It isn't a blockchain at all. It actually does everything a blockchain can do. So it still is blockchain, but it's technically a distributed ledger. So we call it DLT, distributed ledger technology, which is the appropriate term. A blockchain is a data structure. It's a chain of blocks. Hashgraph is a directed acyclic graph. So a graph of cryptographic hashes, different data structure. We don't need to get into the weeds. Turns out there was a place for it in the market. 2017, our timing was pretty good. We raised $124 million at a $6 billion valuation.
And I believe that's a big thing, because right now, I mean, talking about transactions per second and all that, there was one blockchain that got really famous, Solana, which they had the proof of history, where they would use timestamps, which for people that don't know what timestamp is, it's just a date where you place a date on the transaction and it will allow the transaction to be placed whenever, and it will still be placed on the correct spot. So I mean, that's a big thing moving on to in the crypto space, because right now we're using Visa a lot. Like every time you go to the bank, you have Visa. Like you're gonna pay for something. Most of the commerces, they only accept Visa, MasterCard, like credit cards or credit companies that are accredited. So moving into that, the crypto allow us to be on that space, do that, but not have like a kind of a dictator or a person like a board or
a benevolent dictator, right? Yeah. I think a lot of these crypto communities depend on leaders. There's both leaders from an infrastructure perspective. So there's centralized decision making in how do we come to consensus as nodes. And then there's centralized decision making. There's two categories of like decentralization. People always argue, oh, we're more decentralized than you. No, we're more decentralized than you. Well, there's two layers of decentralization. The first is the decentralization of the infrastructure on the network. How many nodes are on the network and how are they coming to consensus together? The next is who's making decisions over the code base. This is who has governance, is like, you know, who has the technical controls and legal controls required to make the decision. No one has more decentralized governance than the Hedera Governing Council, because you've got more than two dozen multi-billion dollar companies that have to vote on making decisions to change the code base. And that's decentralized. In Ethereum, it's Vitalik and a couple friends. Now, as Ethereum grows and Vitalik has less and less say, it has been the case that his job of being a politician is much more, he's got to rally the support because there are now other decision makers. But in the early days, Vitalik was a benevolent dictator. What he said went, you make a decision, that is the law. That's the law of the Ethereum protocol.
Oh, yeah. And that was a big, I don't want to go into details, but that's where we had like, it was a big problem when we have the fork from Ethereum Classic to what
it's massive
now to Ethereum, what the Ethereum we know now.
The parity hack, of course.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't want to move in that direction. And that was a defining moment. And every time that those forks have happened, it wasn't just Ethereum, it was Bitcoin too, right? There's the Bitcoin Cash guys and the Bitcoin SV. Yeah. There were all of these early political debates, and the politics hasn't stopped. We'll continue. Crypto is innately political. It is political. When you launch a cryptocurrency, in the word cryptocurrency is currency, and currency is native to an economy, you're launching an economy, and the people who hold that coin are political. They're political, and they care about the politics of that economy. They care about what is happening in that economy. So you need politicians to be able to sway them.
Definitely.
And that's not going away. That'll always be the case.
Definitely. So going into this now, decentralization. Yeah. So we're moving into a big space right now. People are talking about NFTs. So this forms what I believe is the beginning of Web 3.0. Like, it's a big thing. Could you, on a simple term, explain what Web 3.0 is for our listeners?
Sure. So Web 1 was this whole notion that every organization needed to be online. Every organization needs a web presence. Web 2 was every organization needs to be social, right? Everybody, the bakery, the nightclub, the law firm, the accounting firm, even KPMG needs to be tweeting or interacting with their clients, customers, partners in the market, being part of the conversation. Now we're being social, so this part of the conversation. Web 3 is, okay, every organization needs to allow their community of customers, clients, partners to become stakeholders in some way, shape, or form. Don't just play a game, vote on what happens inside of that game. Don't just use a service, vote on how that service and what those rules of those, like how that service operates. You know, if you look at the problems in Web 2, they've bubbled to the surface in major movements and events. YouTube demonetization. It was a moment in history where YouTube arbitrarily, overnight, demonetized some of their top creators. They updated their algorithm, and all of a sudden, it wasn't just the Logan Pauls and the Jake Pauls of the world that got demonetized. It was the mom and pop, the small YouTuber making only $100,000 to $200,000 a year on YouTube, saw their income almost completely wiped out. And there is no open source algorithm behind YouTube. It's proprietary, it's closed source. There's no way to vote. There's no DAO, no decentralized autonomous organization that they can show up to govern. So there's frustration. The same happens with Google. Google updated their search algorithm as well. Also, of course, Google owns, Alphabet owns both Google and YouTube. Google updated their search algorithm, Panda and Penguin, where Google algorithm updates for how they rank web pages. Entire small businesses wiped out overnight. Amazon decides to change the terms of service of their Fulfillment by Amazon program, or decides to compete with their own FBA, Fulfillment by Amazon sellers, by white labeling. It's called Amazon Basics. If you get really good at selling a product in Amazon, you know what your reward is? Jeff Bezos is going to clone your product, slap Amazon Basics logo on it, and start competing with you. That is what Web 2 has amounted to. If you go back to the founding primitives of the internet, no one can say that the founders of the internet, right? Tim Berners-Lee and friends, the academics, they were well-intentioned people that wanted to create something called the information superhighway, where any human anywhere in the world at any point in time could have any bit of information that they ever wanted. They never expected us to get to a point where a single dude in his late 30s, a sociopathic billionaire, if you will, could deplatform a sitting president. We never expected to get to that point. And it doesn't matter whether or not you liked Donald Trump. It doesn't matter what your politics are. Why is one tech CEO so powerful that they can censor an entire country, or that they can deplatform a prime minister or a president or a politician? we were never supposed to be there. We need governance. We need more decentralized control over the platforms that we use. Web3 is this movement. It's this notion. And sorry for being long-winded.
That's good.
I get excited. I get passionate about it.
Hey, I'm the same as passionate as you. I'm listening to you. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
This is amazing.
Web3 is a revolution. Web3 is, there is a war happening right now in real time as we talk for control over the internet. It's the most exciting thing in the world to be part of. It is a fundamental tectonic shift, a revolution, an earthquake happening beneath our feet for control over this next phase. Now, Zuckerberg doesn't want it to change. It's why he changed the name of the company to Meta, and he wants you to use his metaverse, not the open metaverse, not an open source, open license metaverse. But the truth is, Web3, the founding core primitives, it's decentralization, where the creators behind platforms are the ones in control. It means that there are DAOs, decentralized governing groups or organizations, where users have a voice, and that voice can get enforced on the protocol, where, you know, it's on-chain governance, where we can move money around and we can make decisions as communities. And these ideas aren't preposterous, they're not theoretical. Uniswap is one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world and operates as a DAO. A MakerDAO has a collateral, an algorithmic stable coin. It's not the one that just crashed. It is actually, I think it's up 66%. I saw it rallied after Terra USD. Maybe we'll talk about that in a second, but after that crashed. But that has rallied, and that's a really good community that has controls. It's not one guy. It's not just Do Kwon making all the decisions for that ecosystem. There's a proper decentralized governing decision-making group to keep that peg, to make sure it doesn't lose its peg. There are other examples of decentralized communities trying to build golf courses. There's one I just saw called DAO BNB. It's a version of Airbnb, but run by a DAO. Instead of, you know, you having Airbnb overnight can say, hey, we're changing the profit share. You're no longer, we're now taking 30% instead of 20% of all of your rental fees. We need protections against those things happening. So if you're adding so much value to the platform, if you've got 500 homes or one home on Airbnb, regardless of who you are, you need to have a voice in what the rules of those platforms are. So Web3 is a movement for the people, by the people, to build platforms that empower all of us. And for the first time in human history, thanks to decentralized distributed ledger technology, we have the toolkit to be able to do exactly that.
And I think that's very important. Like you've mentioned a lot, the community and how people need to unite to be able to decide. Like there's not one person governing. And how important would that be? There's a lot of misinformation about crypto. Like right now, people, there's people that don't believe in crypto right now or disbelieve crypto because of what happened at Terra Luna. UST. This happened in 2017 when we had BitConnect, the big fiasco of BitConnect. So, like, what can a regular person that want to work or be pioneering on this environment and contribute to the future, what can a regular person do to, you know, they could start investing, but what they should be looking for?
Yeah, great question. So for those that don't believe, because I talk to a lot of non-believers and I see them on a daily basis, the best way to think about cryptocurrency is to not think about cryptocurrency at all and think about the cloud. The cloud today, every single person listening to this is using the cloud. If you're watching this on YouTube or you're downloading this podcast from Amazon or Apple or wherever you download your podcast from, it's being served up from a cloud server. The cloud was different than how you and I grew up. When we wanted to host web pages, I remember with my dad, we would build a server, we'd put it in the house, we'd plug it into the internet and plug it into power. And as long as that server in my house didn't lose power, that was hosting my website. That is like the first version of the internet. Then we came up with this notion of, okay, we'll use other people's computers. The cloud, what we call the cloud, is just someone else's computer. Today, that's Jeff Bezos's computer. He owns the biggest cloud provider. They own 80% of the market. It's called Amazon Web Services, AWS. They serve up like Madden, NFL 2022. If you play the mobile application, most of the mobile apps you use come from there, right? There's also Google Azure. There's Oracle Cloud and IBM Cloud and, you know, lots of different cloud providers. Blockchain gave us this concept of it's cyclical. We're going to go back to the way things were. Everything in life is cyclical, and for better or for worse. So instead of it being someone else's computer, what if it was our computer again? Anyone in the world can add a node to the Bitcoin blockchain, right? And what does that node do? Well, in cloud, when you use cloud or when you use a web host like GoDaddy, you pay money to GoDaddy to give you CPU bandwidth and storage to host graphics, a content delivery network, or files to host up a web page. Well, blockchains do exactly that. When you connect a computer to the blockchain, you are getting paid proportionate to the amount of CPU bandwidth and storage that you're providing to that blockchain. Right? We've got Filecoin that works just like that. We've got Bitcoin that works just like that. So you have all of these Bitcoin nodes on the network, but just think of them like servers. They're just servers, just like Jeff Bezos has servers in a data center that are now being connected. But instead of being in Jeff Bezos's data center, they're now in the garage of a mom in Australia. They're now in a home near Niagara Falls where there's cheap electricity. They're now in China, in India, and all over the world, and people can get paid to build a decentralized cloud. Now, what can you do with that cloud? Well, in the case of Bitcoin, we can power a payment network. Now, why do you even need cryptocurrency? That's a lot of people ask me that. Why do you even need cryptocurrency? Why can't you just pay for that with a credit card or with US dollars? Well, you need a way to incentivize people to add computer resources to the network. And then you need the security, especially if it's a proof of stake network. So there's a way for someone to consume the resources of the network. If you want to send Bitcoin, you need a little bit of Bitcoin to pay the gas, the transaction fee of the Bitcoin blockchain. And you need a way, a currency for the people who are adding CPU bandwidth and storage to get paid. When you add a block to the Bitcoin blockchain today, you get 6.25 Bitcoin if you add the full block. Typically, it's a fraction of that. Because lots of people contribute to a block, plus the transaction fees inside of that block. Other blockchains work in similar ways. So these are economic models. The cryptocurrency is the incentive, kind of like an American Airlines loyalty point. They have a loyalty point to get you to fly the airline. Well, these loyalty points, these cryptocurrencies, get you to add computer resources to these blockchains because we need to power general purpose global application networks. There's so many ways to get involved in that. If you want to provide infrastructure, anyone can be Amazon Web Services now. You can still start Bitcoin mining companies. That's still a very profitable business. A lot of Bitcoin miners are profitable above $3,000 to $5,000 per Bitcoin. Bitcoin at the time of us recording this is still well above, you know, $25,000, close to $30,000 maybe even today. So, you know, it's still very profitable to create Bitcoin. You can build applications on top of these networks. Or partner with people to build applications around these networks. We need better wallets. We need better custodial tools. All of these are business opportunities that have popped up. There's asset managers that are popping up. If you know how to manage money and you want to run crypto trading strategies to just help institutional investors or credit investors take exposure to this, there's a blue ocean of opportunity for people listening to this to get involved. But I think the core, like the starting place I tell everyone to go to, and they always look at me like I'm crazy, go read the 9-page Bitcoin white paper. Just read that. If it takes you one time, you're super smart. You should definitely be in the space. It took me 20 times before I actually understood it. Read it until you understand it. There's endless opportunities in the sector.
And that's really important because there's a lot of people that trade and invest with a lot of misinformation, what my uncle, my grandfather, my dad, friend of friends said. And it's very important to understand it. You said it, like read the white paper. Papers to understand the technology, because right then you will be able to see what the capabilities it has with what surrounds you if you don't understand it first. So that's very, very cool to know. Now we're almost done here, and I want to dive real quick into something very important. This little thing right here, the key. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about the key. Can we? It's the key on camera? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So this is my key. I was a bit mad because I wanted the electric one.
It's beautiful.
Oh, but I still love it. Yeah. I love it a lot. So NFT.com, like, that's a big name. Where it came from, real quick, what are the plans? I've been onto the Genesis Key Club meetings, and you've been very vocal about taking decisions as a community. Like, I believe, and I understand that if I ask you what it's going to be, probably your answer is going to be like whatever the community decides. But like, what do you envision in the future with the community? Like, what would you like to achieve with the community that we don't have right now? For example, in my eyes, this could be like bigger than Facebook or something like a Facebook where you own your stuff and you're able to sell it if you want. What are your takes? Like, what do you, when you say NFT.com, what do you see?
Yeah, so in Web 2, the way people launch businesses was the Facebook way or the Clubhouse way, where Mark Zuckerberg built something behind closed doors and said, hey, anyone with a harvard.edu email address can get access to this. The way to do that in 2022 and beyond is to build your minimal viable community first and to invite them to leave their imprint and to help govern what you are building together. We know it's going to be a marketplace because the crypto marketplaces and NFT marketplaces today are insufficient. We know that it needs to have some notion of identity because we need to stop connecting Facebook Connect and Gmail Connect and LinkedIn Connect everywhere we log in. We can't allow Google to see everything that we do. They just take our data and they sell it and they monetize it, but we lose all right. Data is the oil of the digital economy. We should be getting paid micropayments via cryptocurrency every time we give our data to someone. Facebook makes something like $12 per user per quarter, or at least they used to. I don't know what the revenue is today. We don't see a dollar of that. Don't you think you can monetize yourself better than Facebook can monetize you? So what if you have the notion of a profile that you own in the form of an NFT? Well, these Genesis keys were the start of that. With your Genesis key, you got four profile mints. Those four profile mints are credentials to either log in for you or you could sell them. You're now part of the marketplace. You could sell those in our marketplace. They're already for sale on OpenSea.
Oh, I got stock market. Just in case anyone was wondering about that, I got
That's going to be valuable. A lot of people have already sold. Land sold for like 10 ETH.
Oh, yeah, I saw that
So there's this crazy secondary market going, which is really amazing. Our model is to make decisions in a decentralized way and to build this with the community. So it's not just Jordan's vision, but it's all of our vision together. All of us can leave our imprint on NFT.com. I'm pointing for the fences, right? This is the Babe Ruth moment where my neck is on the line. We're a fully docs team, and I want to prove that there's a better way to build technology companies, that you should do it with a community first, build a community first, then launch the product. You'll see over the next, I hesitate to say time period, but you'll see very quickly.
Yeah, because people believe like if you say something closer, oh, it's going to happen tomorrow.
So, exactly. So I want to manage expectations, but I'll say Genesis key holders are going to be the beta testers for all the new features that we roll out. So as we start to roll out features, if you're excited about this, you can still get a Genesis key. Over 3,000 keys have been sold. I don't know the exact number, but there's still something like 1,400 keys available you can go get. You can still go mint one. It'll have four profile mints still associated with it, and you'll be able to, it's at NFT.com, you'll be able to go get your profiles. Those profiles, if you're a collector, it's your gallery. If you're a creator, it's the storefront. It's where you would show your RuneScape gold points when it's a digital currency or when it's an NFT. It's where you'd show your land in Decentraland or the land you own in a metaverse or the authenticity certificate of a Rolex or the title deed of a physical verse property in the real world when those are tokenized, because I think that'll happen over the next decade, or again, just something digital that you own. So our vision is everything of value in the physical world and in the digital world is going to be tokenized, everything. Right? RuneScape metaverse land, real world land. Seats to concerts in the metaverse, seats to concerts in real life. All of it a token. And if we can be the home of where you display all of those tokens and where you interact and transact and trade, but it's not controlled by one white sociopathic billionaire, but it's the community together, then that's better. We don't need more crazy, you know, Mark Zuckerberg types or Jack Dorsey types. We need communities. We need communities that are aligned in vision to protect against someone getting kicked off the platform or someone getting censored. And that's only going to be more and more important as more and more people come online. So it's exciting. We're really early. I just got the numbers, actually. I'll share this. There's only 7 million people in the world who have ever, in 2022, as of May of 2020, only 7 million people in the world have ever purchased an NFT. Wow. To give you an idea, we're a couple hundred million accounts in blockchain accounts total across all protocols, and we'll cross about a billion. If we keep the same trajectory, we'll cross a billion blockchain users, probably middle, about June or July of 2024 going into 2025. So if we keep the same growth trajectory, blockchain will be the fastest adopted technology in human history, period. Faster than internet adoption. And then what can you do on a blockchain? Well, there's cryptocurrency, but then there's NFTs. So we're really excited about NFT.com. What a domain. It's too good to just belong to me. So it belongs to all of us. It belongs to the community. This is going to be what I spend the next couple years of my life, hopefully the next decade on.
Oh no, it's going to be a great time. Already participating on the community, very, very, a vocal community. Like there's a lot of good ideas rolling out. Like,
oh, good ideas. And there's FUD too. There's people who, whether you like my ideas or not, join the community. I've been the first to say that. I said that at Grant Cardone's event. I said that everywhere. Join us. We need a diverse viewpoint, and that's important.
Oh, that's great. So last thing, like if I were to ask you three things for a person that want to start into the crypto market, NFTs, crypto, blockchain, whatever, and invest on it, what three things they should start, like three steps for them to start?
Yeah, to start. So good question. I wrote a Twitter thread on this, but it's no longer pinned to the top of my Twitter, but it's called How to Get Started in Crypto Without Getting Lucky. I'm thinking maybe I need to pin that, but if you go to my Twitter feed, I'm twitter.com/JordanFried, F-R-I-E-D. And if you go there, somewhere on my Twitter thread or my Twitter feed is a thread with about 20 tweets in it where I say like how to get started in crypto without getting lucky. And what I mean by that is there is massive wealth creation happening now. I mean, guys even younger than me who have made hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, Sam Bankman-Fried, great example. When I met Sam Bankman-Fried for the first time, he was making $80,000 a year at jump trading. He's now worth over $20 billion today. And I think he's only 28 or 29 years old. So to see that those kind of opportunities, he just brought liquidity to crypto, took traditional liquidity providing and market making and brought that to the crypto ecosystem and built a better cryptocurrency exchange. He also took advantage of the kimchi premium, the Bitcoin arbitrage opportunities, but those same arbitrage opportunities exist. They exist with NFTs. At any given point in time, an NFT may sell for a higher price on OpenSea than looks rare. So you need a good eye for those. I would start with that Twitter thread. I include a couple of resources, including job boards, if you want to just get a job in the space and learn. I think that's super important. Don't invest, obviously, more than you're willing to lose, and do your own research. Of course, I think that goes without that should go without saying at this point.
Definitely.
Unfortunately, it doesn't. If the yield opportunity looks too attractive, it probably is because it is. So be careful with things like Anchor Protocol. We just saw that ended in disaster. How I like to do it in everything else. A mentor of mine once said, "Find someone who's where you want to be." And just do what they're doing. Just copy what they're doing. I think the best thing people listening to this can do is find a friend that's into crypto. It's important you pick the right friend or pick the right person. If you can't find it close by, pick someone from afar who's kind of where you want to be and just mimic what they do on a day-to-day basis. What are they focused on? Like, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried's building a cryptocurrency exchange. Is there opportunities to build other cryptocurrency exchanges? Yes. So focus there. Will there be more cryptocurrency exchanges? Yes. Are they harder and harder to start? Yes. But it's still a worthy place to spend that opportunity. So, that's a pretty good self-selector.
Those are great because I mean you pretty much summarize. So everyone that wants to follow Jordan Fried, they got and follow those steps. They got you on Twitter. What was it?
I'm Jordan Fried everywhere. So in Discord, I'm JF. So if you go to NFT.com, you can join our Discord. My handles is JF in there. I will never DM you, and you shouldn't be DMing people in crypto anyway because they're just trying to steal your crypto. There's a lot of impersonators on me, so I'm just Jordan Fried. No underscores, no numbers, just Jordan Fried on Instagram, on Twitter. Small following, but
I believe that's a first one of the first steps. Just start following people that know what this is and what they're doing, or at least try to know what's coming up. So it was a pleasure.
Another crazy tip, because you're doing this with me right now, and you said you've been following me for a while. When I was, this was 2013, I was a huge Gary Vaynerchuk fanboy. Like, I love Gary Vaynerchuk. And I'm like, I gotta meet this guy. And I created a fake podcast and I wrote email after email, took 12 emails, rejection, rejection, rejection. Finally, Gary had an opening his calendar. And I recorded a fake podcast that I released on my blog with Gary. He gave me 30 minutes just to get time with him. So I'm not advocating go do stuff like that, but there's ways to get to the people who you want to meet or at least get close. So thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Definitely, man. This is a big thing for me. I told them again, let them not make me go all fanboy on you, because I mean, I got a whole bunch of questions, but it was great, man. It was a pleasure, and it's really good to try to educate people on this crypto market and cryptocurrencies per se. Like blockchain, it's a big thing. I believe it's the future of what we have right now. So it's really good to have you here and explain it on a easy way to digest.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Thank you very much. See you on the next episode. And yeah.